OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Well, here we go again. We mean it's 2024, but politically, we're back at 2020, getting a rematch of the 2020 presidential campaign between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Both men dominated the primaries on Super Tuesday. Biden won every contest other than a very small vote in the territory of American Samoa, while Donald Trump won everywhere except Vermont, which went to Nikki Haley. Haley responded by suspending her campaign on Wednesday morning without endorsing Trump. But this means it's Trump versus Biden one more time. What did we learn from Super Tuesday and its aftermath about the presidential race to come? Plus, we'll talk about some other notable election results from around the country. So Trump was the big winner everywhere. But Vermont, let's talk about this a little bit. I think it's a dominant performance, Kim. There's no denying his success here. He ran away with the primaries. Haley only won two contests, Vermont and the District of Columbia. Leads me to the question, was it possible in retrospect for anyone to have beaten Trump this year, since he ran in many ways to the average Republican voter as an incumbent?
Yeah, you know, I think in retrospect, a lot of us who were wondering if we wouldn't have more of a competitive primary are now wondering if, in fact, the die was not cast in the beginning, especially given this dominant performance. And we should give him in due. Look, this is not just an incredibly strong Super Tuesday victory, but this is one of the strongest primary performances, at least in the Republican Party, maybe in either party, in modern history, just in terms of the numbers. And given that you started with 14 different players on the field, and given that a lot of them got out fairly quickly. So you did end up with a one-on-one race, which many of us have said, oh, if you just get to a one-on-one race, you'll have a competition. Not so. And I think some of this really does come down to the other guy, Biden's unpopularity. In the end, I think a lot more Republicans might have stood up and taken notice if there was an extremely strong Democratic opponent who, in poll after poll, wiped the floor with Donald Trump in a theoretical matchup. That was not the case. You have ended up with one of the weaker Democratic candidates ever. And so even those Republicans that might have had some concerns, who really care about winning, said, well, look at the polls. Donald Trump can beat this guy, and I kind of like him a little bit. And we also want some vindication and retribution for what happened in 2020. So let's go with this guy. Add to that, I think, DOJ prosecutions, which kept Trump in the news. And you can thank Democrats, I think, for Donald Trump's nomination.
Yeah, I think the Democrats do get a lot of the credit, if you want to use that word, for the nomination. We, in the editorial today, have a timeline of Trump's polling. They have polling averages across the whole primary season. And once Alvin Bragg did the indictment last year, Kyle, he popped something like 6-7 points right away. Trump did. DeSantis fell. And he kind of went from there. And each of the successive indictments might have been a quick dip, but then it was back right away, rising again.
Yeah, that's undeniably true that these indictments have rallied Republicans to his cause. And I agree with you that it, in retrospect, Trump running sort of as an incumbent, reminding people of his record, particularly on the economy, low inflation, low unemployment, rising wages, is an appealing message given the inflation and the wage erosion that people have seen in their paychecks when they go to the grocery store over the past years. But I would double down on the point that Kim makes. I think that as important to this is Biden's weakness. And if you go back and look at the Real Clear Politics polling average, Trump versus Biden, the last time that Biden had a lead, a meaningful lead in this polling average, was in the middle of September. And so that was months after the indictments had already come down and been built into the polling, the Republican polling on Trump. And if you look at it in recent days, Trump is up in the polling average by about 2 points. And I think that convinced many Republicans that they didn't need to think about electability, that it's not a gamble nominating Donald Trump for a third time. And it is worth noting that being 2 points ahead of Biden is not where Nikki Haley is. In the Real Clear Politics polling average, again, she's beating Biden by 5 points. And again, that's the average. Recent Fox poll has her up by 8 over Biden. New York Times poll has her up by 9 over Biden. And so I do wonder if you had an incumbent Democrat who was a little bit younger, a little bit stronger, a little bit more vigorous, and that polling spread were different, if Biden were neck and neck with Trump or beating him by 1 point and Haley were up by 2 or 3, whether that would have changed any of these outcomes.
Well, interesting counterfactual, but water under the bridge at this point. Republicans have decided that electability is not their primary concern. They want to go with a former president who at least has the experience of being in the Oval Office. And the prospect that those poll numbers suggest of an election rout, if Haley were at the top of the ticket against Biden, will now be what might have been. All right, let's listen to Donald Trump on election night with his message on one of those days where the American public gets to see you triumphant. You get to make your case to a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't see you regularly. Let's hear what he had to say.
We've watched our country take a great beating over the last 3 years. And nobody thought a thing like this would be possible. We wouldn't have Russia attacking Ukraine. We wouldn't have Israel being attacked. Iran, as you know, was broke when I was running things. They were broke. They didn't have money for Hamas. They didn't have money for Hezbollah. We had no inflation. Inflation is destroying the middle class. It's destroying everything. Inflation, if you look back over the history, hundreds of years back, it's called inflation. It's called a country buster. And that's what it's doing to our country. What's happened with inflation has been unbelievable. A lot of people say, a lot of experts have said, the stock market's the only thing that's doing well. And that's doing well because our poll numbers are so much higher than Joe Biden's.
Well, another comment that the president made was an extended riff on immigration and open borders. Kim, that struck me a couple of things about his remarks. One, this is a version of American carnage, the theme from his first inaugural, how America's going to hell and it's horrendous. And that's going to be a big part of his argument, what has happened under Biden. Then the other part of his remarks last night were, remember when I was here, we did so much better on energy. We did so much better on immigration control. We did so much better. There were no wars. The economy was better. So he's contrasting his record with Biden's, but nothing about the future in there. Nothing about the future except the future will be like the past you had with me in the first term.
Well, we were talking about Joe Biden and how his own weakness likely helped Trump with his potential nomination. But I think you can say the same thing with regards to the theme that he's now pursuing, as you just laid it out. Remember 2016, Make America Great Again. He was saying that we were in a dark period because of Obama. He is back with the same theme again, only this time Biden's made it so easy for him. He can say, look, here's how things were before when I was there, and here's how things are now. Do your compare and contrast and see which one you prefer. I agree with you. He's not looking toward the future. I think it would help his campaign if he did. But at the moment, he does not feel the need to because Biden has made this pretty easy. And look, people do go back. I mean, in general, if you're just talking about energy prices, if you're talking about your ability to go buy groceries, if you're talking about relative safety and whether there's crime on the street, nobody was looking at the pictures that we're seeing right now of the border. And so for a lot of Americans, they may have some unease with Donald Trump, his leadership style. But on their day-to-day questions, I think that's a valid approach that he's taking to say, are things better now than they were then? And most people's answer is no, and they know what things were like with him.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll listen to Nikki Haley as she pulls out of the race to spend her campaign on Wednesday and the prospects of unity for the Republican ticket when we come back.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson here on the Potomac Watch podcast. The day after Super Tuesday, and we're parsing the election results and what they mean for the presidential campaign. Nikki Haley Wednesday, after taking a drubbing in everywhere but Vermont and the primaries, has dropped out. She gave a talk announcing what she was doing. Let's listen to what she had to say.
I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people.
Well, interesting. She did not endorse Donald Trump. She basically challenged him, Kyle, to say, you have to reach out to make the gesture to unify the party. Trump mentioned unity. We will have unity in his remarks on Tuesday evening. But he didn't mention Haley. He didn't mention how he would do that. There was no gesture there of reaching out. But Haley responds and says, look, if you want unity, it's going to be up to you as the triumphant winner to reach out, which I think is smart because my view is that Trump needs her voters to win. Without question, the MAGA majority that he has in the GOP is not enough to win a general election. He shoots through in every single exit poll and other polls. And he needs to reach out to her. And I think it's a pretty shrewd stance by Haley.
Sure. It remains a very closely divided country. And remember, the 2020 election was decided by several tens of thousands of votes in three states. And maybe Donald Trump will make that turn sometime as we get near to the general election and try to win back some of those Republicans who didn't vote for him in 2020 and have been voting for Nikki Haley. But he seems unwilling to do that, at least for now. Here is his Truth Social post on Wednesday. Nikki Haley got trounced last night in record-setting fashion, saying that much of her money came from radical left Democrats, as did many of her voters. I hope she stays in the race and fights it out into the end. It is classic Trump. And the person who is taking your advice, interestingly, is Joe Biden. Here is what he said on Wednesday. Donald Trump made it clear he doesn't want Nikki Haley supporters. I want to be clear. There is a place for them in my campaign. But of course, the problem there is President Biden has seemed unwilling to move to the center on any issue at all and try to moderate himself in a way that would attract swing voters and independent voters, in part because he has his own troubles on the left side of his party. We can maybe talk a little later about the uncommitted votes in the Democratic primary on Super Tuesday. And so it does leave this question of you have these two polarizing figures, one in the Republican Party, one in the Democratic Party. Most voters, according to the polling, don't want this rematch to happen. And what are those people going to do in November?
Well, that's where the election will probably be decided, Kyle, whether they're independents, self-described independents, Kim, or whether they're former Republicans who are alienated from Trump, say they're not part of the MAGA movement, or Democrats who voted for Biden in 2020 but are upset by the consequences of his economic policies in particular. And I'm thinking of Black men and Hispanics who've been moving away from Biden in every poll, largely due to inflation and economic results. And that's who Trump is trying to appeal to. So he's trying to peel those voters off. But if you look at all the exit polls, about 30 to 40% of the Republican voters in the various state primaries said that if Trump is convicted of a felony, that would make him unfit to be president. So what impact does that have if he is convicted? And then a fair chunk of Haley voters say that they won't vote for Trump at all, just can't do it. And as Kyle's quote of Biden's remarks suggested, that's where Biden sees the opening to win. The problem is he's made no policy concessions at all to get them.
Yeah, let me give an example just from last night's and yesterday's voting. Everyone's focused on these huge numbers that Trump racked up. And again, give him his due. In Alabama, he got more than 80% of the vote. In Alaska, he got more than 87% of the vote. But dig in to the swing states. And my example here is North Carolina. This is going to be a big battleground this coming fall. It was a state that Trump did win in 2020, but barely. It was very narrow. He got about 75% of the primary vote. But go and look. And what you see flashing from those results is that he is having the same trouble and weakness in suburban areas that really hurt him in the midterms in 2018 and in the presidential in 2020. So if you look at those areas around Raleigh and Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, they were very strongly in favor of Haley, or more strongly in favor, and he had trouble there. And then you read those exit polls you talk about, but these from yesterday, Paul, in North Carolina, a majority of Haley voters, and I think this is notable, a majority said that they were voting against Donald Trump, not for her. And overall, in the entire state, a quarter of GOP voters said that they would be dissatisfied if Trump were the nominee. So that's a huge potential turnout problem for Donald Trump come this fall. Now, you can play that up against Joe Biden's obvious weakness, which showed yesterday, too. Kyle mentioned Minnesota, 19% voted uncommitted rather than Joe Biden. In Colorado, 8%. North Carolina, 13% preferred no preference over Joe Biden. So he's got issues as well, too, with his base. But this gets back to my point. I think this is a race to see who can become least unpopular.
Yeah, and I'm not sure either one is going to get into the positive column on favorability by the time this is over. They're both competing to see if they can maybe get 40% of the people who actually like them before this thing is over. What do you think, Kyle, was accomplished by Nikki Haley's run? And where do you think her future is? What do you think she's aiming for?
I think that she showed there is still a sizable contingent in the Republican Party who holds to traditional Reaganite conservative views on many of these issues. And I think that's true not only based on the voting results in these states, places where she is winning a quarter or a third of the Republican primary vote, which is, as she said at one point, not a majority, but not nothing either. But also going back to those debates where she would make arguments about America's foreign policy and its place in the world and saying that we should stand up for freedom and help allies like Ukraine and Israel. And you would have a crowd of people in the audience cheer for that in a way that you wonder if they would still do that if Donald Trump were on the Republican debate stage making the opposite argument. But it is interesting to me. And I think that she is probably making a play for picking up the pieces if President Trump loses the 2024 election ultimately. I mean, unlike a guy like Governor Ron DeSantis, she does not have a prominent day job that will keep her in the political limelight and allow her to go do something else while she waits for the 2028 election to come back around. Staying in this primary and making the case that that traditional Reaganite base is still there is her path forward, I guess, to make a name for herself and have people remembering in 2028, if we get to a second Biden term, the end of it there, that she was the one who said that Donald Trump couldn't win.
All right, we're going to take a second break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Haley's future and the chances of unity for Republicans, as well as some of the other notable results from Super Tuesday when we come back.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/Wall Street.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast. That is, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gauque here on Potomac Watch with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. And we're going through the results on Super Tuesday. Nikki Haley's future, uncertain. She didn't endorse Trump ultimately, but she didn't foreclose that. And I think in the end, if Trump makes some gesture, she probably will endorse him. That would be the best bet, I think, to preserve a path to a post-Trump presidency if she wants to run again. But, you know, there's also an argument for not doing it, Kim, which would be to say, look, if he doesn't do enough to get me there, then I'm just not going to do it. And particularly considering some of the harsh things she has said about his leadership and policies. I suspect, Kim, that this contest has essentially blocked any chance that Trump would put her on the ticket because he just doesn't like to do that. He likes to dominate people. That's the thing about Trump. He likes you to, as he puts it so often, bend the knee. As he put it when John Thune endorsed him, the senator from South Dakota, they always bend the knee. And if you don't bend the knee, he resents it. And I think that is probably one of the causes for his outburst on Truth Social, saying that Haley got trounced on Wednesday. You know, I think Haley has carved out a place for herself in the party. And if Trump loses, you know, the Republicans will have a big old Donnybrook about where they go as a party. And she would be part of that debate.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think she blew up the Veep bridge a long time ago when she decided to really go after him on a personal leadership style and continue criticizing him on everything from cognitive ability to his personality. She also said that she wasn't angling for that. And we can see how the other candidates who got out, they were very careful even in the race not to burn the same kind of bridges because they wanted to hold out that possibility of getting named on a ticket. I think you're right that she's being very shrewd and not immediately endorsing him. And notably, what I think she's trying to do is to get him to give a nod at least or agree that some of the main issues that she campaigned on need to have a bigger voice in his own campaign. And she laid those out in her speech today as she said she was suspending. They basically come down to national debt and spending, the need for Republicans to do that, congressional dysfunction, and the need for Republicans to re-embrace regular order and working for the people, and then the need to step away from American retreat and again, be a strong voice in foreign policy. We'll see how many of those, if any of them, Trump moves on. But she was pretty clear that what she'd like to see in order to endorse him. And you're right. Look, if he ends up losing, she will have positioned herself very well and also enunciated very well those differences and some of the concerns that holdout Haley voters had with Donald Trump's current direction.
All right, let's turn to some of the other notable results. A couple of things from the West Coast, pretty interesting. San Francisco had a quality of life reform initiatives on the ballot, drug screening for welfare benefits, letting police conduct car chases. They passed, and overwhelmingly. Also pass an initiative encouraging public middle schools to offer algebra. I know that's a radical idea, but the school board had said, oh, no, we're not going to do that because of equity reasons, because algebra is apparently discriminatory against minorities. That has now been repudiated, even though this doesn't have a binding effect. It was certainly a rebuke to the school board. And the quality of life issues here, Kaya, coming to the fore, which suggests that maybe San Francisco doesn't have the suicide impulse that it has been demonstrating in recent years.
Yeah, I think the crime issue motivates voters in a way that can cross partisan divides. Keep an eye also on the Los Angeles district attorney race there. The incumbent George Gascon is up by only about 4 points. And of course, it's California. It takes forever for it to count and get through its ballot. So only half of the vote is in there. But interesting that an incumbent who is running an election like that, he's at about 21% of the vote only. And that is not a place you would want to be comfortably.
It was a multi-candidate race, though.
Right. And so that's a fascinating result as well. I would also point to the Texas races that we talked about on yesterday's podcast, the Governor Greg Abbott endorsing state legislative candidates who want to pass a educational savings account plan that had been blocked by the legislature. And as of the results I was seeing this morning, 8 pro-school choice candidates have now been elected, defeating incumbents. And so that could be enough to get this school choice plan across the line. I think it's a vindication of Greg Abbott's choice to play in those primaries in a way and kind of follow the strategy blazed by Kim Reynolds, the governor of Iowa.
Kim, you want to add anything on that? I mean, I also saw there was an initiative on the ballot in Texas, Prop 11, saying Texas parents and guardians should have the right to select schools, whether public or private, for their children, and the funding should follow the student. it passed with 75.4% of the vote in Texas.
It was a big night for school choice in Texas. And by the way, good for Greg Abbott for stepping out and doing that. Kyle noted 8 who have already lost. 2 more, I should note, are in runoffs. So depending on how this plays out, you know, Greg Abbott could end up with 10 new votes for his educational savings plans in this next legislative session. Also, 3 GOP members of the State Board of Elections who had taken positions that did not sit well with voters. One of them is likely to lose their seat. 2 more, it looks like they'll be in runoffs. So again, this was a huge day. And I would note too that a lot of these, and this ought to send a message, a lot of the holdouts in this were rural Texas legislators, Republicans, whose attitude was, you know, we got pretty good schools here and our public schools aren't as bad as those inner city schools. And we're going to protect the local school establishment. That did not sit well with Republican voters, including in those areas. And so I think this is a really strong message, because quite aside from those who actually lost their seat, when you have a victory like this and such a shockwave, those who did vote against his educational savings accounts and who kept their jobs nonetheless might have a different view on how they're going to vote going forward, lest they be next.
Right. Interesting results, encouraging results out in a couple of the states, no matter the drama at the presidential level. Less than inspiring. But thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you all for listening. We're here every day on Potomac Watch, and we're off and running in the presidential race. Please check in with us every day to follow the ins and outs.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.